Okay, the Torah tells us that Noach was an Ish Tzaddik, and he was Tamim Haya B'dorosav. Now, the term B'dorosav is a little bit of a puzzling term, right? B'dorosav means in his generations. Right? We don't normally talk about that, right? We talk about people who are a Gadol Hador, the Tzaddik Hador. We don't talk about the Gadol Hadorosav. Right, meaning that in all of his generations, he was the Gadol. And there are Gadolim that lived through many generations, right? Meaning Rav Eliashiv died at what, like 106 or something? I don't know. I think they say that Rav Eliashiv lived to see a great, great, great grandchild born. So what happens when you take Shimon Esrei L'chuppah seriously and you live to 106, right? So we got not five, six generations. Right? I think they say, the Maisa they say is that they asked him if he's going to go to Bnei Brak to be sounding at the Bris. And he said, no. So they, I'm too old, I'm not going to shut up. They said, no, you should go. And he said, I'm not even sure I'm related to him. Meaning, it could be that it's not obsoletus. My club has been shown him if you could have enough generations in between that it ceases to be obsoletus. So somebody showed him all that a great grandfather is not obsoletus. So certainly a great grandfather would have you. But then they said to him, but it says in one of the Sfarim HaKadoshim that if you're a son to get a great-great-great-grandchild's bris, then you go straight into Gan Eden. You go straight, you know. So Rav Eliashiv supposedly said, when I go into Gan Eden, I plan on going through the front door, not sneaking in the back door. You don't ever refer to someone as a tzaddik bidoro sub, right? This is such an unusual thing. So the Sforno suggests, yeah, but Noach lived a really long time. He lived in the generation of Shelach and Lemach. He lived in all these different generations, so he was B'dorosav. But the Lechora, that could be said about anybody. It could be said about Rav Eliashiv. It could be said about us. We've seen our grandparents, and we're, God willing, you're all going to one day see your grandchildren, and you should be zocher to see your great-great-great-grandchildren also. Right? Meaning we all see generations. So what exactly does that mean? So my friend Rabbi Moshe Bamberger, the Mashkiach, in Lander College, suggested a mahalik that I thought was extremely insightful. Pointed out that Noach didn't just live a long and very eventful life. He actually lived a life that spanned two entirely different worlds with entirely different realities. He saw a world before the Mabul and a world after the Mabul. And lo karav ze el ze, the two were not at all similar to each other. He lived in two entirely different worlds. He straddled two realities. The Medrash Rabbah says something very similar. In Brachos Rabbah Lamed Ches, it stresses Tamim Haya B'dorosav. The Medrash says, Rabbi Levi Omar, Kol Mi Shenamar Bo Haya Ra'a Olam Chadash. That anyone who it says Haya about saw an entirely new world. There was a newness to what Noach saw. He previously saw stones melt down to nothing, and now he emerges, and whatever was there is no longer there. It's an entirely new world. Similarly, the Medrash says that during the time of Churban, there was a similar experience for the people who experienced Bayis Rishon, lived through 70 years of Golus Bavel, and came back for Bayis Sheni. The Golus Bavel was only 70 years, so there are some people that got to see both Batei Mikdash. And the level of Hashras Hashchina and Bayis Rishon was much, much greater than that of Bayis Sheni. So when we came back, they rebuilt the Bayis Sheni, and the Pesukim in Ezra, whoever did come back, and the Pesukim in Ezra described the reaction of the old people who had seen Bayis Rishon when they first laid their eyes on Bayis Sheni. And the Pesukim described, Vayanu Bahala Lobodos Hashem Kitov Kili Olam Chazdov Al Yisrael Vichala Ameriyat Rogadola Bahala Hashem Al Husad Beis Hashem. There was a huge celebration, a new Beis HaMikdash. Everyone was super excited. V'rabim me'akvanim v'alaviyim v'rashayah avos hazikeinim asher ro'u sabayis harishon v'yosu zeh abayis b'neihem bochim b'kol gadol. But the people who remembered the old Beis HaMikdash, they were crying loudly. V'rabim b'trua b'simcha laharim kol. And the others were celebrating at the same time. V'eina am makirim kol truas ha'simcha L'kol b'chia am, ki ha'am marim tru gedolava kol nishma ad mirachok. And you couldn't tell whether this was a joyous event or a sad event. Because half the people were celebrating and partying, and half the people were crying their eyes out. So even as people were celebrating and rejoicing, the elders were crying in distress over how much of a downgrade the new Beis HaMikdash was. So there are two critical messages to derive from this idea. First critical message is that it is possible to have something that is both good and bad at the same time, to feel two opposite emotions at the same time. A person can celebrate a Binyan Beis HaMikdash and still mourn over the loss of a greater Beis HaMikdash. A person can have gratitude for the ability to build a new world after the whole world was destroyed, even as he's struggling with the destruction that his eyes just saw. It's a significant part of our avoda. We just experienced the Simchas Torah, where all of us, the entire Jewish world, or the entire thinking Jewish world, feeling Jewish world, was struggling with this issue. How does one celebrate Simchas Torah when, you know, especially the week we just had? How many new Yisomim Valmanos? I mean, the numbers are staggering. And the quality of the people that have been lost. To realize that, as Rutkowski said on Monday, the sakana is not less, it's greater. That it's so how do we go about it? How do we do it? So we went to our Rebbeim and we asked for advice, for Eitzah, in what to do. And part of the Eitzah is that a person needs to know how to feel Simcha at the very same time that a person feels tremendous Tzad. That a person has to have sophisticated enough emotions to feel more than one thing at a time. Klal Yisrael in the beginning of Tzuvos Vayesheni were described as being bifurcated, that there are those that were celebrating and those that, but if you view Klal Yisrael as a body, there was sadness and happiness at one time within that body. I mentioned many times that the Vart from Rav Schwab, that my friend Binyamin Palm told me, he was in Queens last Simchas Torah by his in-laws, the Davenet Rav Noach Isaac Olbam Shul, and Hakavos were going on, but they had already heard that something terrible had happened in Eretz Yisrael. So my friend couldn't dance. He was sitting in the corner, learning Chumash or something. He just couldn't dance. And Rabbi Olbam came over to him and said, you know, what's going on? Why aren't you dancing? And he said, how can I dance at a time like this? So Rabbi Olbam sent over the Vart from Rav Schwab. And he said that when Kriyas Yamsuf happened, the angels wanted to sing Shira. But Hashem didn't allow it because Masi Yadai told him, B'yam v'atem omrim Shira. So the obvious question is, what do you mean? You're not allowed to sing Shira when Kriyas Yamsuf happened? The Jewish people sang a pretty famous Shira at the time that Kriyas Yamsuf happened. Right? The Shira that we repeat every day, Az Yashir, was composed of Kriyas Yamsuf. So Rav Schwab suggested that a malach can only have one emotion at a time. A malach, if he's singing Shira, a malach has one shlichus. If a malach is singing Shira, then he's not reflecting on Ma'aseh Yodai Tovim B'Yam. A human being can reflect on Ma'aseh Yodai Tovim B'Yam at the very same moment that he's also singing Shira. And that's the avodah of being a human being. That a person sometimes, the avodah of being a Jew, that a person sometimes has to know how to attend the Levaya in the morning and feel the sense of Avelus and a chasna in the afternoon. Certainly if you're going to be a rabbi, you need to know that. Right? And feel that sense of Simcha and participate fully, with a full heart, in both places. That's message number one that comes out of this. Second message is that it's important to recognize when the world goes through a world-changing event. Something where it's not just like, wow, something interesting happened. But no, the world today is not what it was before this event. This event was so big that the entire world has changed. There are certain events that aren't just traumatic, they're life-changing. There's, you know, in American history, there's pre-Civil War America, and there's post-Civil War America. Those are very different places, and on very different trajectories in terms of where the country is going. For those, in my age bracket, there was pre-9/11, post-9/11. The way you fly in a plane changed drastically after that, and other things as well. So we have to recognize that if a Jew was alive in the time of the Simchas Torah massacre, some events are so big, some events are so traumatic. It's not just traumatic, it's world-changing. Holocaust survivors lived their entire lives without recognition. You know, Rav Gifter, Zichrono Livracha, was a tremendous Ohev Eretz Yisrael. So he had moved to Eretz Yisrael, actually, and he was summoned back to become the Rashiva in Telz in Cleveland. But he didn't want to come back. So he went to the Stipler, hoping that the Stipler would tell him he doesn't have to come back to America. So the disciple paskin that he has to come back. Okay, so he came back to America. He was a tremendous, tremendous Oyev Eretz Yisrael. So he was once asked which Makom Kadosh in Eretz Yisrael was more emotional for him. Was it Kever Rachel or the Kotel? I don't know why you would start asking if gifted to rank your favorite, but whatever. So someone asked him gifted this question. So he said that the Kotel was more emotional for him because he had seen Churban in his lifetime. So when he saw Churban with his own eyes, when you see a Bayis Necharav with your own eyes, it just strikes in a different way. A Kever is a Kever. A Kever of Tzadik is a Kever of Tzadik. A Kever of Tzadik is a Kever of Tzadik. It's Makom Tefillah and everything else. But for someone who experienced Churban, when you see Churban, it just hits differently. Which, by the way, is worth noting even about his attitude toward the Kotel. Right? Meaning when he went to the Kotel, he viewed it as he's experiencing Churban. We tear Kriya when we go to the Kotel. Rav Reisman often says that Rav Palm went to the Kotel once and he couldn't bring himself to go back because he thought, he couldn't believe that people were schmoozing and taking pictures and, hey, how you doing? How long are you here for? Like, he thought that you're in such a Makom Kadosh. How could you? He just couldn't be sovel, so he never went back. He couldn't be sovel. So when you go to the Kotel, yeah, we're very excited to have such a Makom Kadosh. And we're very happy that, that Harabayit Biyodeinu, that after 1967, that we got it back. But at the same time, we realize that it's a symbol of Churban, that what's behind that wall is Churban. That's part of that first message. So, when a person comes to this recognition that we live in a different world, it's really should be immediate. It should be immediate that we make this cheshbon. But sometimes it takes time to process. Every Rosh Chodesh Elul, I try to think of okay, what's going to be my Kabbalah for this year? And sometimes I'll go weeks and I just nothing's hitting. Nothing's talking to me. And in middle of Musaf and Rosh Hashanah, it will hit me oh, that's it. Right? So sometimes you know that you're supposed to be different because the world is different. And if the world is different, I'm supposed to be a different person. But it's hard to know exactly how. It's hard to know what Hanhaga Tova, what hakpada in halacha, what new learning or new chesed I should take on. We do know that the grand changes don't work. I remember after the summer of the three boys, everyone was saying, now there's not going to be any more fighting in Klal Yisrael. Or during COVID, there's never going to be an expensive wedding again. Everything's going to be tucked on a wedding. Didn't last. So we know that it's got to be something small, but we also have to take stock. Did the way that the world changed allow us to change? Did we have some new anhaga and did it stick? Is it still working a year later? We're not going to do this, obviously, but if we went around the room and said, what were your Simchas Torah Kabbalahs? What are you still doing differently because of Simchas Torah? We have to have an answer to that question. We have to have an answer to that question. And I'll tell you personally, there's one thing I did right away that Baruch Hashem is very, very tiny, but Baruch Hashem is sticking. And there are other things that hit me throughout the year. I should do this. In a world that looks like this, I should probably do this. And it took months to even just come to the recognition. So it's not too late. It's not too late. If there isn't that something yet, or there's something more that could be that a Jew who lives in a post-October 7th world should have this, or where I'm standing, where I'm up to in my life, knowing that what I saw with my own eyes, what I've experienced, what I've heard about, should have some anaga, something. So I think it's that's the avodah. So again, the two messages of Noach living b'dor Osav is first to realize that sometimes there's great destruction, even at times, and simchas still happen, and good things still happen, and we have to be able to manage both of those things in our hearts at the same time. That's always been the story of the Jewish people, and also that we have to recognize that we live in a new world. We live in a world that was different than the world that existed pre-October 7th, pre-Simchas Torah of last year, and we have to make sure that we are not the same people, that we're living b'dor Osav.